From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's our Economies of Scale special. I'm Todd Gleason, out of the office for the day. Coming up, we'll discuss the size of farms in the United States with Carl Zuloff, agricultural economist emeritus from The Ohio State University. He'll also take up the small number of players and the economies of scale in the fertilizer industry. Krista Swanson from the University of Illinois will join us to discuss combine economics and the economies of scale. And along the way, we'll turn our attention to South America and an interview I did with the governor of Brazil, Blario Maggi, at the time in 2007, and whether he had run into any economies of scale as he grew his farm to some 750,000 acres, all on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Carl Zuloff. He is a professor emeritus from The Ohio State University. Carl, thank you for being with us. You and the folks here on this campus have penned an article that's up on the FarmDoc Daily website entitled Monopoly Pricing Power and Fertilizer Prices. I am sure that many people will have read this with great deal of interest. I'm wondering why it is that you wanted to bring this question up of monopoly power and pricing of fertilizer.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion of fertilizer prices, and in that public discussion of fertilizer prices, and in that discussion, there's often the point made that there are so few producers of fertilizer, both in the U.S. and around the world, that it sure looks like they could be monopoly pricing power going on and that they're raising the prices. So that was the principal reason for writing the article. The second principal reason was this is monopoly power has had a long history in the U.S. going back to the late 1800s, early 1900s, long history in economics. And we wanted to summarize what over 100 years of investigation by economics has the key points that have emerged from that long-term investigation of monopoly pricing power.
On that note, is just having a few individual or even one entity within an area sufficient to call it a monopoly?
If you define a monopoly as a single firm, then a single firm would be a monopoly. Economists would use it in terms of the type of pricing power, not the number of firms. And the long history of investigation by economics clearly says that you cannot associate monopoly pricing power, which is defined in economics as the ability to raise prices in a sustained manner above the cost of production. So we would call abnormal prices or abnormal profits would result from that. To obtain abnormal profits, it is not appropriate to associate it with the number of firms in the industry. So if there's just a few firms, it is inappropriate to conclude that monopoly power necessarily exists in that industry.
Why is it the case? What are the things that might happen which cause monopoly pricing not to be in play?
The history of investigation suggests that there are three principal reasons for why you need to be cautious about associating the number of firms in an industry with the existence of monopoly pricing power and therefore abnormal profits. And those three are, you need to consider, are there substitutes? The second is there economies of size in producing the goods? And the third is, are there a number of barriers? In terms of substitutes, what economics would say is, do consumers have an option? And if they have that option, if you try to raise the price as a firm, consumers can move to that option and therefore avoid the higher prices. Now, what we mean by substitutes here is not a number of products, like the number of makes of cars. It's a distinct different product. And the classic example is the emergence of automobiles and gasoline-powered trucks at the turn of the 19th century and what that did to the competitiveness with respect to transportation and the railroads. Barriers to entry means that the firms in the industry have some way to keep other firms out so that if they would raise the price or restrict supply or partition demand, other firms could not enter and produce the product and therefore defeat the barrier and lower the price. Technologies, economies of scale is how much does this, the cost of production go down as the amount of output increases.
And there's one other thing about the economies of scale or size. I take it that makes abnormal profits sometimes not exist.
Actually, economies of size, all three of the factors that I mentioned are critical to the existence of abnormal pricing and abnormal profits. Economies of size, I think, is one of the more interesting ones, because what you can show is that even if abnormal pricing exists, users of the product could be better off with that abnormal pricing than if you were to create more competition and do away with the abnormal profits. And the reason is because if an industry has very steeply declining cost curves, so that if you expand output of an individual firm, you really drive the cost of production down. And then you come in and you say, nope, you're making abnormal profits. We're going to force you to diversify. We're going to break the firm up. We're going to create more competition. What you do is you drive the production back up the cost of production curve, so that even though if you go from one to several firms, they may no longer be making abnormal profits, but the cost of production is so much higher that the user could end up paying more after the competition is introduced than they did when somebody had monopoly power. And I think this is really important in economic policy, Todd, that you consider, if I did something, could I make the situation worse? I'm not saying that breaking a firm up would necessarily make the situation worse if you create more competition, but there's a very distinct possibility that that could happen if you do not take into account what the production function looks like and what the economies of scale are.
Is there anything that the nation needs to do in order to better understand how the fertilizer industry works?
We need to have really good analysis of the competitive structure of the industry, both in terms of what are the substitutes, how viable are the substitutes, what are the barriers that actually exist, and I think critically, what is the role of technology in the sector? What are the economies of sizes? You would want to tend to think that there's a very high startup cost in the fertilizer industry. In other words, it costs a lot of money to put a fertilizer plant into production and then to keep it into production. And it's not just the physical capital in that, it's the technological knowledge that you have to do that. Large entry cost, large startup cost tend to be associated with fairly substantial economies of size. So I think one of the really big questions that people need to ask themselves when they talk about fertilizer prices, and I fully understand why fertilizer prices are a topic. They're substantially higher than they were a year ago. But we need to ask ourselves, what are the economies of size in the industry, and how does that affect the pricing that you get? Otherwise, if you addressed it and didn't consider cost of production and technological size of production, you might end up causing the price of fertilizer to actually go up when you think that you're bringing it down. And that's something that policy always has to worry about. Are you trying to do the right thing and you end up doing the wrong thing?
So based on the conversation we just had and the barriers to entry, which normally are cost related to starting a row crop farming operation or any mm-hmm. farming operation, do economies of scale suggest that farms in the United States are too small?
Todd, to go back the idea of studying production functions has lost currency in economics. The studies that exist in almost every industry are really old, dated, 20 years or more. Okay. The same is true for agriculture. We really do not have a good feeling for what the economies of size are and are not in row crop agriculture in particular, Todd. Now, we have reasons for believing that they're very large in livestock because we've seen such a growth in large livestock facilities. And so you would want to say this is what's going on. They know the business. They know that there's large economies of size and that they're building the livestock facilities to match those economies of size. In row crops, the studies are literally over 20 years old, which is a long time. You think about how technology has changed in the last 20 years in row crop production. But at that time, it was really debated how much economies of size really existed in agriculture. It was not in row crop agriculture. It was not, I would argue there was no clear conclusion from the academic studies that had been done. There was a tendency to find economies of size. What we found more often was there was not diseconomies of size with farms. And so the growth in the size of farms was because I could get bigger and I didn't see my cost of production going up. And so it's really the lack of diseconomies of size in row crop agriculture that matter, not the economies of size. But this is all based on studies 20 years ago, Todd. I don't know what we would find today if we did the similar studies. Now, there are purchasing economies that come into play, okay? Larger producers buying more inputs, getting bigger discounts. And that could cause the curve to go down, as well as the, when we use the word economies of size, we usually are referring to production technology, okay? But there are marketing analogs to this that could be going on also, that could be driving it down. And I certainly would trust Gary and any analysis that he has done out of the FBFM records, and that would be a really good record set to use. But I would point out that there aren't a lot of farms that are that large, and so you would have a small sample question.
Interestingly enough, I also asked this question of the former governor of Mato Grosso in Brazil, who at the time when I was talking to him was supposed to be the world's largest farmer, although this was in 2006 or 7 or 8, somewhere in that area. He had another farmer with him that had more hectares. And when I asked, he said that he had to break the farms up into 100,000 hectares, roughly speaking, and that the limiting factor was for him geography.
Yep.
And being able to move equipment.
Personally speaking, Todd, I think the bottleneck on farm size, I do not see, this is me speaking personally, and it's anecdotal evidence. The lack of diseconomies of size is really important. The fact that you don't see your cost curve going up is just as important as anything else, because that means I can expand. I can duplicate my farm. My personal experiences is the drying capacity at harvest for those who grow corn is perhaps the bottleneck on the farm. You can only dry so much so fast, okay? And that ultimately, how much can I get done over whatever the time period that I'm thinking of, let's say a month to 6 weeks, can I get everything dried down? And that can become a bottleneck.
The other thing, as I'm thinking about it, is that he said while geography was the way he split the farms up, he did not split the inputs up because there were economies of scale in purchasing for the whole of the farm, despite the fact that he had to have different sets of equipment for each farm.
Yep. And, one of the arguments in an academic sense here, not in the political sense, but in an academic sense that was going on at the time, the last time that this was a topic of interest in the research areas of farm management was the trade-off between technological economies of size, which many people at the time believed did turn up. They did become less efficient, but could you override them with marketing economies of size? And my understanding of the literature is that question was never really fully resolved. Could marketing economies completely overwhelm technological diseconomies?
Interesting. Well, I will run some of this by Gary to make sure I got the 5,000 to 7,000 right. And I'll probably use it at some time. I won't use that part today for any reason. No. I'll use the first part. But
Do think, Todd, for what it's worth, I do think we are going back to a period where technological economies of size, not just in agriculture, but across the country, across the U.S. industry, manufacturing sector in particular, is a topic that's going to come back onto the radar screen. And we're going to see much more interest in it than we've seen in the past. And a lot of it is because of the rise of the concern about monopoly pricing power in much of U.S. industry, including technology, Amazon, the new tech companies, Amazon, et cetera. I do think I sense that this is coming back onto the stage of investigation.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That was a conversation I held with Carl Zuloff in the spring of 2022. He is a professor emeritus at The Ohio State University and an agricultural economist. Now, let's step into the Wayback Machine and we'll go to 2007. It was the month of May and Blaro Maggi, the governor of Brazil at the time, was visiting the United States. He and a group of other farmers were in Illinois hoping to see an ethanol plant. I acted as their guide and we visited the Lincoln Land Agri Energy facility in Palestine, Illinois. Along the way, I was able to ask Blaro Maggi some questions about his operation. He was supposed to be the largest farmer across the planet with some 750,000 acres under management. That's about 300,000 hectares. And I wanted to know if he had run into any blockades as he was trying to grow that operation, what the limits on the economies of scale might be. I spoke to him through an interpreter.
Okay, the governor is talking about here that the economies of scale, they reached their top far back in the past when they reached around 100,000 hectares of production of soybeans. And they don't really have much more economies of scale from there. However, the type of growth that they're having is not just increasing the acreage, but they have different several units that they operate, and they are sort of independent. They have they have different it's the same farm, but there are different units, and each unit is have a separate administration, and they do some of their operations together. But for instance, they buy inputs together, but they use separate machinery, and they have different goals. So although he has a lot of acreage put into production, they have separate units of production.
I followed up this discussion wanting some more clarification about the economies of scale.
Right. You may reach a point where you have these economies of scale. If you have a farm that has, 300,000 hectares, he says that you have economies of scale up to 100,000 hectares. Then you start to break that down into different units, so that each unit uses their own machinery and their administration separate, but the only thing they do together is they purchase inputs, but that's about it.
So the economies of scale that Blaro Maggi in 2007 told me he had reached were 250,000 acres as a single unit. He had some 750,000 acres under management. but a 250,000-acre unit was the largest management unit that he could use to purchase inputs and to sell grain and oil seeds, for example. Within that unit, there were other economies of scale. Some of those were based on geography, so how close the farmland was together. That was mostly related to both labor and equipment. One other note, Maggi was traveling with an entourage of farmers at the time. Again, remember, Maggi was farming some 750,000 Brazilian acres. There was one producer in the bus that day that was operating more farmland than the former governor of the state of Mato Grosso. There's one more item I'd like to take up in our Economies of Scale special. This time around, it's the combine, the most expensive piece of equipment on the farm. The FarmDoc team explored this topic. Krista Swanson was the lead. I asked her to explain what they found.
So a couple takeaways. Really the cost, the economic cost of running a combine is very similar. It's right there in the range of the average and median custom rate. So one thing that tells me is that if you have the most important thing in considering a combine is making sure that it's appropriately sized for your acres. And in the article from Tuesday, September 1st, you can find links to more details on that as far as, you know, for how many acres would to keep that economic cost at a flat level, you know, how does that fluctuate depending on the size of combine compared to the acres. So that's kind of one important thing. If you're keeping that in line, then and you have the labor available to do it yourself, then, you know, I think you can completely justify doing it. Smaller farms may want to look into hiring a custom operator or a neighbor. Really, the custom rates and the economic costs on grain hauling are equal. And so that is maybe the simplest thing to outsource if you're short on labor or, you know, that's one thing that I think a lot of farms take into account is that if you're a little short on labor, then that's a good way to get, you know, an extra person, and you're not really spending any more money than what it would cost to be doing that yourself. And you've got an extra person. And of course, as with anything, there's some challenges. You know, if you hire a trucking, may not be as easy to find if you're wanting to go to your own bin site versus to, you know, another outlet. So it's like I said, no one size fits all approach, just a lot of things to consider. And especially in these times, I think an important thing to evaluate.
That's Krista Swanson. She's a member of the FarmDoc team. You can learn more about machinery cost on the FarmDoc and FarmDoc Daily websites. You can search either for machinery cost or combine. You've been listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming, our weekly agricultural programming, and a way to subscribe to each of those as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. Our theme music for the day is produced and performed by Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thank you.